Hey, welcome everyone to a Baseball America podcast. Thank you, Dave Slade, for the intro. I'm John Manuel. He is Matt Eddy. Trying to get back on the podcast horse this week after the month of June. We're just getting a magazine and covering the draft, Cal World Series, futures game rosters. It's a scene, man. It's a scene in the month of June. Matt, thanks for all the work on keeping up the draft database. We have the draft deadline coming up next Friday. Don't think there's going to be a ton of drama with that. I think most of the drama has been sucked out of the draft signing period by the bonus pools and how huge the bonus pools are. We even got a little drama sucked out of the futures game rosters this year, Matt, because the process changed. Baseball America is still very happy to be part of the process with Major League Baseball and MLB.com and selecting the futures games. They changed the process a little bit this year, a little bit more of a focus on the international team in terms of spreading the love to more countries. I call it the E.J. Toon rule, back to the fact that Evert Jan Toon, T'Hoen, of the Netherlands, actually made a futures game 17 years ago.
The unforgettable Angels prospect.
That's
correct?
Right. Well, you're using the word prospect quite generously there, I think. That's what brought us a roster that includes Davidas Navarauskas, although, you know, Davidas Navarauskas actually throws, you know, in the low 90s now.
I can't believe you could pronounce that.
I've asked around. I do know that I'm pretty sure it's Navarauskas. But Davidas Navarauskas on the start. You get a Lithuanian.
That's the Pirates reliever, we should say.
Pirates reliever. So I'm actually looking forward to seeing him in person. I'm looking forward to seeing Jarrell Cotton in person. But I just think in general, there was no way, Matt, that this year's futures game was going to be an epic futures game because the talent in the minor leagues, it's just natural that it is at a bit of an ebb, whereas last year it flowed with a ridiculous amount of talent that got to the big leagues. And even from last year's futures game, Kyle Schwarber, Michael Conforto, several other players who were in the futures game and then went up to the big leagues and were postseason factors. So when you graduate and you have a year of the prospect like we had in 2015, it felt like it'd be very difficult to construct futures game rosters that would rival last year's just based on the talent on hand in the minors.
Yeah, we kind of ran into that with the midseason top 50.
Yep.
It's like, is this guy, we really want this guy number one? We really want this guy number two, you know?
Midseason top 100 coming out actually next Wednesday as we record this on July 6th. I think it's a week from today, July 13th, that Baseball America's midseason top 100 will come out and updated top 10s for every organization. We're working hurriedly on that, but we're taking a look at the world roster right now, Matt. Who are some of the guys on this world team that you're looking forward to seeing on the TV? I'll be in San Diego. You'll be here. Who are you looking forward to seeing on the telly?
It's always fun to see Alex Reyes. That's an obvious answer.
Right.
Indians catcher Francisco Mejia is a guy who's really come on. He's a switch-hitting catcher from the Dominican.
Yeah. That's a prospect who plays a premium position and is starting to perform offensively to go with it. But again, a low class A player. I think in general we would almost have rather skewed the team a little bit younger, but I understand why you'd want to go older with some of these players too. And I think when Ty goes to the low A guy for us, you know, at Baseball America in some ways, because we want to see that guy on that stage. I think other people who are involved in the process, the tie goes to the double A or triple A player.
Yeah, and Tyler O'Neill, Canadian outfielder for the Mariners. I've never actually seen him in person.
Oh, he's strong-bodied. Yeah. I mean, that's one way to put it. And he's probably the number one prospect in the Mariners organization at this point. I haven't finalized that, but it's not Alex Jackson. We know that. He's answered that. Asked and answered, counselor. We know it's not DJ Peterson.
And Edwin Diaz is in the majors.
Edwin Diaz has graduated the major leagues. Dirty slider. Pretty basically 18 strikeouts per nine last I checked. I think he had 27 strikeouts and 14 innings in the big leagues for Diaz. So Drew Jackson's, you know, nice little prospect. But Tyler O'Neill's probably your number one guy there in terms of the impact that he has with the power that he's shown so far. I kind of like the rest of that outfield as well. All those world outfielders, Jorge Bonifacio, Eloy Jimenez, Manuel Margot, Tyler O'Neill, Ramel Tapia. All those guys, it's a pretty different, a lot of variety in that outfield as well. I'm kind of partial out of that group to Manuel Margot because he does a lot of things well, but he's not exceptional in anything. I think you and I have debated Ramel Tapia before. Where do you fall on Tapia in terms of impact potential?
Tapia.
That's the Colorado guy.
Yeah, probably not star potential, but he has a lot of the attributes that reserve outfielders have.
Yeah, I struggle with him because, man, he could really, really hit. Always hits for a high average. Doesn't draw walks very consistently. His power numbers, I feel like, have ticked up a bit this year on the Hartford Road Goats. I know they're the Yard Goats, but...
How about Alejandro Deaza? Somebody like that. Like a left-handed hitting outfielder who can run. Same Dominican heritage.
He feels like he's a better version of that, so I'm not sure what the better version of Alejandro Deaza is. Like Deaza when he hits.
Yeah.
Because this guy does feel like he has a better hitting track record than most minor leaguers. Yeah. So he may hit his way into more of a... I don't know. To me, he kind of feels like a Chris Coughlin type, like where Chris Coughlin's value is pretty much tied up in his batting average and never hits for power commensurate with a corner. Maybe he gets away with center field when he's healthy, that kind of thing. That's who Tapia kind of reminds me of. Because Chris Coughlin always hit. He hit at Ole Miss. He hit in the minors. He hit with the Marlins when he first got to the big leagues. You know, Tapia doesn't have that obviously doesn't have that infield background, but last I checked, he was 13 for 26 stealing bases this year. So I know he's got speed, but how much does it really impact the game? Yeah, he can play center, but all the reports that we have are that he fits better on a corner. He is one of the more polarizing, I think, prospects in the minor leagues. And the Rockies have had a really, I would say disappointing year in the minor leagues for a farm system. When you look at Ryan McMahon having a really brutal year in Double A. Really hasn't gone well for him in his first test above A-ball. Forrest Wall still yet to break out. Senzatella's got an injury now. Mm-hmm. Toppy is actually one of the guys who's had a good year for them. The other parts of this this world team, I'm pretty interested to see Willy Adames. That's the guy who's gotten a lot of, when you get traded at 18 for David Price, it's kind of you're kind of a big deal. I want to see what all the hype's about. People in the Florida State League liked him a lot last year. The world infield is interesting with Naylor, Moncada, Mateo, Adames. All those guys are intriguing players.
Even without the Mets, Ahmed Rosario. That's the one guy I'd love to see if they could get him on the roster somehow.
That would be a guy that would be wonderful to see. We'll see if Jamer Candelario of the Cubs, who's in the major leagues right now, if he comes back to the Futures Game roster. He's not been removed officially yet, so we'll see what happens there. I do think, pitching-wise, we just had Ronaldo Lopez in Durham last night. I didn't get to go see him. Josh Norris in the office went to go see him. And it sounds like Lopez's breaking ball was not sharp last night. His velocity was a little down. But he's had a great year. But there's not really a real big depth of big-time velocity on the world roster this year.
No.
Not really a pitcher that I'm too intrigued with. And the U.S. roster, Matt, is kind of like your draft class of 2015 All-Stars in some ways. Where's Harrison Bader on this? How come we couldn't get AAA Harrison Bader on here to join Alex Bregman, Dansby Swanson, and Andrew Benintendi, the guys who dominated the college conversation in the draft last year, picks 1, 2, and 7 overall, all represented on this Futures Game roster.
Yeah, who's your big pick to click here?
You know, I'm fascinated to see. I've only seen him once before with I forget which pro national team it was. I want to see Josh Hader again. I really want to see Jeff Hoffman again. Saw him in college. I want to see him again here. We've got Ryan Stanek throwing 100 miles an hour out of their bullpen. But the pitcher I'm probably most intrigued by is Phil Bickford.
Yeah, that was my pick too.
Never seen him in person. Two-time first-round pick. Was good in the Cape on the summer. Was good for Cal State Fullerton. Not great. Was put up video game numbers at JC of Southern Nevada. And has really been an outstanding pro so far. So for me, seeing how that fastball plays, it just sounds like he gets a lot of ugly swings, Matt, at 91, 94.
That's how his reports always read, even though the velo appears to be down from like his peak levels.
Right.
He's about 20. His numbers, especially since moving to San Jose, he's really up a gear. I mean, do you see him as like a right-handed Bumgarner almost? Like
kind of,
fastball command is reigns supreme for a Giants prospect.
I think it's a combination of it's good velocity, it's good enough velocity with angle, deception, life. It's late life. Guys just don't square this guy up. And granted, it's A-ball and amateur. That's the background. But so far, so good. He hasn't found a hitter who can consistently square up his fastball. And that's just a great building block. In that regard, he does remind me of Bumgarner. In terms of that, just that's such a fundamental building block, and he's a guy who can throw that pitch over and over 70-75% of the time and be really effective with it.
Also low walk and home run rates. So he's not somebody who hurts himself.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and Josh Hader is somewhat similar in that there is now this genre of low slot left-handers, and Bumgarner's in the genre.
Mm-hmm. Might be the president.
He might be. I mean, he's clearly a little different body type. Well, not little. He's a lot different body type than a Sale or a Hader. The skinny low slot guys. We just saw one in Fort Bragg on Sunday in Adam Conley.
Mm-hmm.
But there are guys who do it the way that Josh Hader does it. And I think that the initial doubt scouts had about whether Hader could stay as a starter, the haters, I think, are fading. I think those guys are harder to find. This guy's consistently getting it done. I'll tell you the other reason I was skeptical of him, Matt. I mean, maybe you've run into this in ranking prospects. You know, when a guy gets traded twice, does that give you any pause?
Yes. You're talking about Hader here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Especially not in significant deals.
Because, he wasn't...
Traded from Bud Norris and then traded in the Carlos Gomez.
Right.
Deal, correct.
Which was a pretty decent-sized deal, but it wasn't even clear that he was the main guy the Astros were getting. You'd
correct.
Think Brett Phillips was the key piece. So that made me wonder... That was another reason why we had a seed of doubt this offseason. I think he was still... What, number 11 in the Brewer system? And what looked like a very stacked Brewer system. But he's kept taking steps forward this year.
Carson Kelly, the Cardinals catcher, is finally hitting this year. And he intrigues me because he has such strong defensive tools.
Yeah.
And now he's actually starting to hit at AA.
He really started to hit last August. Mm-hmm. That's where it started. I mean, he was a guy who... Here's a guy. I actually did agonize over, am I going to rank... Carson Kelly, or am I going to rank Aledmys Diaz at the back of the Cardinals' top 10? And I guess the answer should have been Harrison Bader. but first year coming out of the draft, I was a little shy on Harrison Bader. I don't remember where I ranked him in the handbook. But I really wanted to rank Aledmys Diaz, but some of the guys I talked to were like, Carson Kelly really finished very, very strong. And you go to his splits last season, and in a month where if you catch every day in the Florida State League, you should wear out, he actually was better in the second half. The on-base wasn't good, but the power numbers were there the last couple of months of the year. So he hit for some power, especially if you factor in September, where he had 5 of his 8 home runs, July, August, September.
Might not see a worse June than that, though. 337 ops.
No, that was a this was a Jason Mott-style June, where Jason Mott used to catch in the Cardinal system and had these kind of offensive productions.
And Kelly entered pro ball as a third baseman, like an Oregon high school player.
Correct.
So he's...
He did not... I mean, this was his second full year, I think, as a catcher. And I tell you, I did not... I really questioned myself almost immediately after doing it. For ranking him in the top 10. But I did it solely off the defense, mm-hmm. the fact that he finished strong, and that the scouting reports, actually the managers in that league really liked him. And it was very close between him and Reese McGuire for a lot of managers in that league. And Carson Kelly's greater physicality and power right now is carrying the day for him as a prospect versus Reese McGuire, who was a high draft pick and is still a guy that, in the draft, scouts still kind of compare amateur catchers to Reese McGuire. But I think... His lack of power is really, he's kind of trending like a Josh Tolley kind of player.
Yes.
And Carson Kelly, power and defensive chops. That's what teams look for in their catchers. Carson Kelly's kind of starting to trend that way. Chan Cisco, again, kind of a different kind of guy. And these are two young catchers. Chan Cisco, just 21. Carson Kelly, just about to turn 22 the day after, July 14th, so soon after the Futures game. Those are intriguing guys with Cisco, really, again, Matt. Hard to find minor leaguers who have a better hitting track record than Chan Cisco.
Well, playing catcher exclusively.
Yeah.
Just adding to the degree of difficulty.
And he's doing it now at AA. We talked about Ryan McMahon earlier, of another Southern California, I believe, 2013 prep prospect like Cisco was. A guy who, does not control the strike zone as well as Cisco. And as a result, even though he's had a lot more power in his career to this point, hasn't been able to translate those hitting skills to AA, and Cisco has because it seems like he's got a better approach. Which of those hitters intrigue you on the U.S. roster? None?
But you have Willie Calhoun, 5'8", and Dylan Cousins, 6'6", like the extremes, like two guys like at the beginning of the year, They're on the Futures game?
Right. Foster? Willie Calhoun can hit. Yeah. The fact that he's listed as an infielder is intriguing. I think he was supposed to play second base, if memory serves. And you know, obviously, you can tweet at me at John Manuel BA. He's at Matt Eddie BA if you want to correct us on this. Willie Calhoun started his college career at the University of Arizona. I believe that he was getting all the scholarship money, and Phillies farmhand Scott Kingery was still a recruited walk-on. And then Calhoun transferred to a junior college, and that's kind of what helped Kingery get playing time. And then Kingery wound up as a supplemental first-round pick of the Phillies. And, of course, Arizona with Willie Calhoun, with Scott Kevin Newman, with Scott Kingery, did not make regionals. This year, all those guys are gone. They go to the College Series Finals. College baseball's a funny game. But Willie Calhoun can straight out hit, and so can Travis DeMare. Those two guys are little guys. DeMare towers 4 inches over Calhoun, but still somewhat undersized. But those guys, the ball comes off their bat pretty well. So Dylan Cousins, like you said, other end of the spectrum physically. Yeah. He's a donkey in a good way, I think. But what is he listed at? 6'6", 235?
Yeah. Benintendi is always fascinating just because there's just not a lot of, like, in terms of body type, maybe Adam Eaton is the closest major leaguer.
He's gotten that comp. I mean, to me, he reminds me kind of a Ben Ogilvy, you know, in the 70s. I know that's a rare comp, cross-racial comp. Ben Ogilvy was originally from Panama, I believe, although he may have been born in the Canal Zone. But Ben Ogilvy hit 41 home runs in 1980, and he was listed at 5'11", 170.
Wow.
So that's why I go there with Benintendi.
I only remember him from baseball cards.
Yeah, he was
in the 80s.
He was one of Harvey's wallbangers on the 82 Brewers World Series team, American League champion. So, but that team, we'll see if Austin Meadows gets healthy. And then, of course, all-time John Manuel Cheeseball, Hunter Renfroe, who hunts deer with his bare hands. I love seeing Hunter Renfroe in this game. And, you know, San Diego's the host team, so the Padres get three guys in the Futures game. Probably the only thing that would have been worse if it had been a Diamondbacks or Angels host this year, because the Diamondback system has taken a significant step backwards, and the Angels are the Angels. So, Padres, did we miss any Padres, Matt, who should have been in this game?
Franchi Cordero. Just kidding.
I love that you went to the Franchi Cordero well. But one of the things we wondered, Matt, was the Futures game has this U.S. versus world format. I don't know if the Futures game will be better with the National League versus American format. It is weird that you have the Futures game with one format and the World Series with another. What if the World format, what if the All-Star game format was done the way the Futures game was done? That was kind of a thought exercise we had to talk about this year's All-Star game. I will say that this was a little bit tougher than I thought it would be. I took some time with this, and I struggled a little bit. I still don't have a world third baseman because Manny Machado.
I do, but
no longer world.
Our task was to build U.S. and world rosters. You know, world being players born outside the U.S., even if they're draft eligible. So Canada, Puerto Rico, et cetera.
Sure, Guam,
if it applies. Virgin Islands, U.S. Virgin Islands.
That's right. But make sure you include who was it? Akil Morris.
Yes. Nice.
And Tim Duncan if he played baseball.
So the idea is to build a roster to compete in a tournament or playoff series, not just a one-game exhibition.
Right. So now, in that case, I know who my third baseman would be, whether he's having the best year this year or not. I would just put Adrian Beltre there as my grandfathered in world third baseman.
Yep.
But so I focus a little bit more on this year. You had a little bit more of like a 3-year window you were kind of looking at, right? Where you were.
Yeah.
Giving a little bit more weight to past performance as well as this year. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of it more as a 2016 All-Star game kind of thing. So,
okay.
On the world, let's start with the world team.
World team.
Did you grandfather in Yadi Molina or did you go Wilson Ramos?
No, I've got Yadier Molina and Salvador Perez.
Those are the two obvious guys. Wilson Ramos is having a big year. I've always been a Wilson Ramos apologist.
Oh, yeah, he's.
You know, so he's perfectly cromulent choice. But if you're looking to win a championship internationally, let's not forget that Yadier Molina was the leader of the Puerto Rican team in 2013 WBC that played in the finals with basically a double A and single A, a bunch of relievers in their pitching staff. And Yadier Molina coaxed those guys. They upset Japan, coaxed them all the way to the final where they lost the DR.
Both these guys have been in two World Series.
Yeah, these are winning type ball players and Molina and Sal Perez. And I don't think that's insignificant, by the way.
No, not for catcher.
Exactly. For guys who are Latin American, Spanish-speaking first guys, to be thought of, to have earned that their place in the game like that, that might not have happened 20 years ago. So I think it's kind of cool. I mean, back then, Tony Peña was like the there was one prominent Latin American catcher. It seemed like at a time in the major leagues, one or two.
Interesting.
Now, I mean, you're talking about two of probably the most accomplished defensive catchers.
Were he and Ivan Rodriguez kind of pioneers?
I think they were in a lot of ways, especially Ivan
Benito
Rodriguez.
Benito Santiago?
I mean, his career was such a flash in the pan, and that's the guy I actually would point out to as a guy who was a good offensive player but was not thought of as like a quote-unquote winner, leader of pitching staffs, that kind of thing, the way that Molina and Perez are. And such beloved players in the middle of America, too. Not insignificant in 2016 with some of the issues we have going on. First base, world first base. I mean, you either go, oh, Canada, either offend a bunch of fans, like the way that Joey Votto, I do love how he messes with fans with the ball. But Miguel Cabrera is Cabrera.
So. Miguel Cabrera, slam dunk. Hall of Fame player.
I think he's still the most fun player to watch hit. And part of it, just the approach and how far he can hit the ball. But I also love his appreciation of good pitchers. You know, he really thinks the game. And on a very small tangent, my nephew looks like him in the face. And my nephew hates it when I say that to him. But I think he looks like my nephew.
What was the nickname they gave Avisal Garcia? Because they call him Little Miggy, right?
Yeah, Little Miggy, yeah. Migosito, I think it was.
And then Votto, you carry him as a pinch hitter.
Certainly, Joey Votto.
Defensive replacement.
He makes the backup roster. If he would deign to be part of the roster, he would be a fantastic pinch hitter. Second base, pretty deep on the world team. Would you go Cano or Altuve?
I struggle with that one. I think Altuve is kind of at a higher level right now, but I think you can't go wrong with Cano.
The thing is, on my lineup, if you were excluding Big Poppy, a world lineup, especially if you're starting Cabrera over Votto, is extremely right-handed. So if you're actually constructing the lineup, I think Cano gets the edge. I think right now Altuve is the better player. And I talk about players I've been wrong about in my career. I've been very wrong about Jose Altuve. He's been much better than I thought he would be. But the world team at second base is pretty deep because you've got Cano, Altuve, Jonathan Scope's an interesting player, a lot of power. I think Altuve's better. I think for this team you'd wind up choosing Cano because you need the left-handed back. Because otherwise this world team is extremely right-handed.
That's a good point, yeah.
If you want to win.
And we have, although you can neutralize some of the American left-handers we might be getting to later.
This is true. As American pitchers, hey, if you're facing Kershaw or Bumgarner.
Well, I mean, we don't want to spoil it.
I think
unless you know, you know, you might have heard of these guys.
Yeah, exactly. So, I like that point. But Cano...
Yeah,
and you can't go wrong with Cano or Altuve. For me, those are the two best second basemen in the game anyway. So,
yep.
Who you got the world's shortest stop? That's usually a strength of the world team.
Yeah, I think if I were playing in this tournament, I would start Lindor at shortstop.
Going for the all-around player.
Get you a left-handed bat. He's probably the best or second best or third best defensive shortstop in the majors.
And I went Xander Bogaerts because, again, I was a little bit more focused on this year than a three-year deal. I do acknowledge that Lindor is the better defender, and if you're going to really construct a team to win a championship, you would profile – in a seven-game series, I would think you would prioritize defense over offense at shortstop. But I still, for an all-star team, I was kind of thinking Bogaerts.
And we have to – you know, Carlos Correa.
Not the most talented of all those guys.
I would say we could fudge it and move him to third base perhaps.
You certainly
could. Third base consideration.
You certainly could, but the captain of the team has got to be Adrian Beltre.
Yeah.
So that's why I'd go Beltre.
Beltre would be on the team for sure. But, I mean, if you wanted to back up every position, I would probably pick Correa as my backup third baseman.
And you know that he has the makeup for it. The weird thing is I was trying to figure out who the world third baseman would be for this year. And I'll be honest with you, third baseman, like that's become a province of Americans.
There are no candidates outside of Beltre.
Because Bogaerts has played third base. In the major leagues, you could certainly slide Bogaerts to third base. He hasn't played it this year, but he played it in a World Series.
Oh, Corey Koski, where have you gone?
Yeah, seriously. Oh, Canada.
Brett Lowry, get back to third base or something.
I mean, Miguel Cabrera obviously came up as a third baseman, but just in present major league third baseman, there's not an obvious guy outside of, I guess, Michael Franco.
Yeah. I don't think he belongs on this team, but
Wilmer Flores.
There you go.
maybe, but there was no Canadian third baseman I could think of What'd you do for your world outfield? Because I went a little bit off the board for some of my world outfielders.
Yeah, I think ideally I would have set it up Cespedes in left, Starling Marte in center, and Marcelo Ozuna in right.
Those are the three. Those are my three starters: Cespedes, Ozuna, Marte. I think it's gonna be tough to decide which of those three guys would wind up in center field. I mean, like right now, Marte primarily still plays left field, Ozuna center, and Cespedes is like all over the place. But he has the strongest arm of the three.
Yeah,
I would imagine that you would.
But I think he prefers left.
I do think he prefers left field.
I think he doesn't like
field.
Right field for whatever reason. And Marte is so fast. I think he would have to be the center fielder.
I think that would be the ideal setup. You got some pretty crazy good world DHs.
Yeah, and then Nelson Cruz and Jose Bautista. I jotted those down as outfield candidates as well.
I didn't even put down Jose Bautista because I'm an idiot.
He's like the Beltre. He's like the elder statesman.
He is. Although as long as you don't put Rougned Odor on the team, I think you're okay.
But we're going to get a lot of flack for not talking about him from Rangers fans at second base.
Or for Ben Radler.
Rangers fans are very attached to Rougned Odor.
I can see why, but he does have a .292 on base last I checked, so this is not insignificant.
And a poor defensive reputation.
Cargo, mm-hmm. Gregory Polanco, there are two of your lefty bats that would also fit onto this team. Gregory Polanco on the upswing. Offensive, he's having a slightly better either Starling Marte. I chose Marte over him just for the defensive chops. A little more polished.
That's a good point. We'd have to get one of those guys on the bench.
I would think you'd want to have Cargo. I mean, he's the guy who's probably earned it, long term.
Yeah, me too. Okay.
But Bautista is the other guy that I didn't have. And again, who wants to see world pitchers hit? The answer, nobody.
Nobody.
So you want Big Poppy or you want Nelson Cruz. I put a DH on this. Edwing, Encarnacion also. So really, I would say the three best designated hitters in the American League, with I guess the possible exception of elder statesman Carlos Beltran, who I guess plays more right field than anything else, are all international. Cruz, Edwing, and of course Big Poppy. I don't see how Big Poppy could be denied, especially again because you need a lefty bat. But
yeah,
Big Poppy.
I don't know if his bunions or his feet are going to allow him to participate in anything beyond.
What, he turned into El Duque?
Beyond the Red Sox, 130 games he's committed.
I didn't realize he had bunions.
Yeah, he has a major foot problem.
I'm telling you, as you get older, that happens. Bunions can happen. World rotation. I had a hard time putting that together. Matt, I went Jose Fernandez for Team Cuba, Johnny Cueto, Danny Salazar, Julio Teheran, and then I am a sucker for Jose Quintana. So I want I spread things out a little bit. I gave Julio Teheran the token Colombian on this team. But he certainly has earned it. He's been pretty consistent over the years. And he's the Braves' number one starter right now on a team that's really not competitive. I'm impressed by how he's been quite good this year. And then Quintana gives you a left-hander on there.
I was scanning my U.S. team to see how many lefty bats there were for Teheran platoon. But
the platoon splits do not favor Julio Teheran. You're right.
Not traditionally. I think if I had to have one world pitcher to start one game and he was fully healthy, I might go with Yu Darvish.
I didn't even think about you.
I think he would be on my team if he had a clean bill of health.
I think I agree with you.
Him, Quintana would be in there. Cueto, Fernandez. Those were all good picks. You know, Felix Hernandez, you have to look at him as like a veteran.
I was looking at this exercise when we emailed about it as a 2016 kind of all-star team part of it instead of the but I did do a five. I did, okay, well, what if I took the all-stars from this year in a tournament? So I was a little bit more focused on this year, but certainly Felix is kind of like the, Adrian Beltre kind of.
Yeah. And you might want him more in like a swingman, Bartolo Colon type of role on this team.
Or you could use Bartolo Colon in that very same role. I mean, you want to talk about team mascot / swingman. If you want someone to eat innings or anything else, Bartolo Colon is your guy.
I just want to mention Carlos Carrasco as well as a candidate. And Tanaka.
I was going to ask you about Tanaka versus Maeda. Maeda's had a pretty decent year this year. I think the peripheral numbers are more in Tanaka's favor. And he plays at a less favorable ballpark as well. But Maeda's been pretty good, and the strikeout rate's better for Kenta Maeda. So I actually considered both Maeda and Tanaka, and I did not even consider Yu Darvish.
Yeah.
But I agree, fully healthy. Actually, fully healthy, one international pitcher to win one game, it might be Ohtani. I might take, I don't know how you pronounce his first name, but I might take the Japanese 21-year-old, 22-year-old Ohtani over all these guys. So,
Being the nerds we are, we did a bullpen as well.
We did two bullpens because we're baseball Americans.
I mean, Aroldis Chapman's a no-brainer.
See, I left him out just on principle.
Oh, yeah?
I just don't.
Okay, so he's not a no-brainer.
But he's not a no-brainer for me. But, I mean, first of all, he's the third best strikeout per nine ratio on his own bullpen. How good can he really be? We'll get to that on the U.S. team. Exactly. But certainly, in terms of pure talent, he's a no-brainer. And there are a lot of other no-brainers. Familia and Kenley Jansen, to me, are no-brainers.
Yeah.
And again, from that grandfather role, Fernando Rodney and K-Rod, those two guys have been long-term guys. K-Rod's career is inexplicable. What were we looking at yesterday? That he was one of the bottom five relievers in the major leagues in terms of fastball velocity?
Fastball velocity. It's like 87, 88.
But this guy's been getting important outs since 2002, for crying out loud. I mean, that's really almost unheard of longevity these days in a relief pitcher.
Yes. So. Hector Rondon and Kelvin Herrera as well. I would just mention those guys. Not that I would necessarily take them. But.
Herrera's a great call, who I left out. Alex Colomé is having a nice year this year. And then how about the Korean final boss?
Yes.
Sung Hwan Oh with the Cardinals. An astute free agent pickup by the Cardinals. A. B. Astute by J.J. Cooper, who broke down the video for me right before we finished the handbook and insisted I put that guy in the top 10. And I wound up putting him in the top 10 basically on J.J.'s recommendation. And we look good for that one, so nice job.
Is he the final
JJ.
Boss now that Rosenthal is deposed?
He seems to have become the final boss, the Stone Buddha. That's his other nickname. So, A, great nicknames. B, he's been really good in the big leagues. So I got to give that guy credit for coming over, and he's been the impact Korean import this year as opposed to Park Byung-ho with his 80 strikeouts with the Twins.
His International League star.
That's right.
The Pirates, Jung-ho Gong, also could be considered for the infield here.
Also gets himself in the Aroldis Chapman doghouse with some sexual assault allegations.
Allegations, yeah.
Against Jung-ho Gong. I mean, it's early. They're just allegations. But you want a winning clubhouse here, Matt.
That's true.
I don't know if you want these distractions around. But Aroldis Chapman really stands out as the lefty in this group. The only other left-handed pitcher either of us mentioned, I think, is Quintana.
World team?
Yeah. Did you have any other lefties?
No, you're right.
So what
Francisco
is it about
Liriano?
See, that's the historically the left-hander on your Futures Game alumni team. It is Francisco Liriano, but it is hard to find international lefties. Americans, the Southpaws, there are a lot of Southpaws of all persuasions, ethnicities, but something about Latin American left-handed pitching, there's just not a lot of it. So I don't know why that is. I can't say. Ya no sé. Not even Canadians. Where's the Canadian lefties?
Not even a good Canadian.
Seriously. Look into that for us, Denny Boucher, will you? How about Team USA? Where would you start? Catcher seems like it's the easiest spot.
Posey. He's just a generational talent. He's
truly is.
One of the best players in baseball. He's got
year in and year out, you know, at a demanding position and very quietly and on a big market. You never hear any hoo-ha about Buster Posey. He's just pretty cool. Pretty cool big leaguer. With Jonathan Lucroy as his able assistant.
That's what I had as well.
First base, not surprisingly, the most loaded American position, at least for me.
Yeah.
I went Anthony Rizzo, but you probably went Paul Goldschmidt.
I went Goldschmidt, yeah.
I think it might have been because I loaded up this team with left-handed bats. At least I thought I was, but
yeah.
I love Rizzo, I love Goldschmidt, and I like Brandon Belt. All three of those guys. I think consistent, productive players there, but I think Rizzo is like the quietest superstar in the big leagues, you know. Being on a big market team like the Cubs with all these expectations. And for me, he's their best offensive player year in, year out. Still is right now, even with the year that Bryant's having. And you just it just doesn't seem like Rizzo gets his due. So I'm a Anthony Rizzo guy. I think, is he younger than Paul Goldschmidt? I think he is.
Probably.
So, but you can't go wrong with either of those guys.
09 draft. College.
Rizzo's 07 high school, so I think he's younger. Yeah. Second base, U.S. is a little bit tougher.
This was impossible. I don't know if I had a starter here. I guess
I went Matt Carpenter. I'm in a TCU frame of mind apparently this week with Jim Schlossnagel, our coach of the year, and I went Matt Carpenter second base. But Daniel Murphy's making a hell of a case, Matt. I can't believe you didn't have Daniel Murphy.
I think if I'm doing a tournament, I think I might be inclined to take Kinsler. Just because he gives you the glove and the speed that you might not get with another option here.
The U.S. second basemen also are aging out. They're older. Honestly, the best second baseman might be Mookie freaking Betts if he could just play second base.
And Kinsler is the rare second baseman who doesn't seem to be affected by you know, growing older.
It's amazing how he's maintained his skills as he's aged. It's actually not, it's not amazing. It's really impressive. He deserves credit for it. Pedroia, obviously, kind of a grand, if you want to win, that's your grinder slash winner type guy who, oh, by the way, can still hit. But I went Carpenter's because what stat was I looking up? Matt Carpenter's just having another, he's just a fantastic hitter.
He is. He leads the NL in OPS right now.
He's such a consistent hitter.
But he's mostly a third baseman, correct?
But he's moved to second now. Now that they put Wong in center field, he's the everyday second baseman in St. Louis. So, while career-wise, he has been more of a third baseman. He certainly has played a lot of second base in his career. And just from a pure hitting standpoint, he's one of the top five. I think just if you're grading out hit tools in Major League Baseball, how's he not in the top 10 just hit tools? He's probably like a straight seven hitter. The guy's just a machine offensively. So I felt good about having him as my American second baseman.
Yeah, there's no argument against him.
Shortstop. That was one where I got confused.
Mm-hmm. I went with Brandon Crawford here. I think he's kind of the best American shortstop right now based on what he's accomplished in the major leagues.
I think that there's a very strong case for that. I put Manny Machado. We put Machado on the U.S. team. He played for the U.S. in the Futures game on the U.S. side, even though, obviously, born in Puerto Rico, moved to Florida, high school at Hialeah High in Florida. Actually, I think he was born in Miami is what you said. He's Puerto Rican ethnically.
We have him as Hialeah and then played high school ball in Miami.
So that had me put Machado at short. Even though he's only played half of this, basically this season at shortstop prior to that. Crawford and then Corey Seager are my other choices of shortstop. And Corey Seager's offensive performance as a rookie is just sick. And how about the two Seagers are both in the top 26 in the major leagues in total bases? Top 25, I should say. Top 25, they just tie. Seager's tied for 24th. It's like a four-way tie of the 163 total bases. So
Corey.
Yeah, Corey's... Kyle.
Kyle, yeah.
Corey's in the top 10 in total bases. Yeah. Corey Seager's in the top 10 in the major leagues in total bases as a rookie shortstop. That's incredible. Not like the rest of that lineup is sizzling around him either, right?
No.
I mean...
He's probably their best hitter.
Oh, yeah. No, I think without question, he's the Dodgers' best hitter. So
at third base, I put Machado at third base as my starter. I know that's a deep position, first base for the U.S., but I think Machado is the best... Most well-rounded.
I think third base actually is the deepest position, even compared to first base. Because when you really think about it, that's another reason to move Machado to short for me.
Mm-hmm.
You got the aforementioned Kyle Seager, who's an underrated, steady player, very good defender as well. Not very good, but good defender. You've got Josh Donaldson, reigning MVP. And then you've got Machado, if you count him at third base. And then Nolan Arenado.
Mm-hmm.
I picked Nolan Arenado because I went defense. And I'm just... I guess I've talked to too many Rockies folks lately, but I'm just obsessed with Nolan Arenado right now, to the point where we stuck him on the cover of the magazine on that defense issue, which was a rocking cover. I'm very excited about that cover with him and Nick Senzel. To me, Arenado's the only thing he doesn't do is walk. You know, everything else you want a player to do, he does. Plays so hard, tremendous defensive player, hits for average, hits for power.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go Donaldson, and then again Machado's extremely well rounded. So yeah. I think you have a better team if you have Machado at short, one of those guys at third, than if you have Crawford at short. But Crawford has won multiple World Series championships as a shortstop, as a defender, and left-handed bat and developing power. So trends for him offensively continue to be very good. When you talk to scouts, like when I talk to amateurs, scouts for amateur draft coverage, Matt. And especially when I bear down on NorCal or SoCal, because he's a NorCal high school kid, SoCal college product at UCLA. Scouts just laugh. They're just like, there's no way I would ever have predicted this guy to hit 20 home runs in the big leagues. Never. Like, the area guys who saw him, especially guys who saw him in high school or saw him his junior year in college or saw him in the Cape, he really struggled in the Cape. So that's why it's kind of amazing. The Giants, one of the things John Barr always talks about is to watch our guys in the Cape. Matt Duffy hitting the Cape. Brandon Belt hitting the Cape. Joe Panic hitting the Cape. The guys they've hit on, Buster Posey hitting the Cape.
Hinojosa, did he hit in the Cape?
I believe CJ Hinojosa may have hit in the Cape, yes. But they put a lot of stock in what players do in the Cape Cod League. If my memory serves, Brandon Crawford struck out a billion times in the Cape. So, roughly, give or take a few hundred million. but he has – his trend lines are so good. Offensively, I think he's a perfectly cromulent choice at shortstop. And the outfield, I mean, two spots are pretty much taken. Trout and Harper. If you're going long term, I didn't have Harper for this year because I was focusing on this year. I wanted to give Jackie Bradley Jr. some love because of the defense and, again, the all-around game. And I'm a Jackie Bradley Jr. fan. But Trout and Harper are money picks. Did you take Mookie Betts as your third guy or did you go Stanton?
McCutcheon.
Oh, you went McCutcheon. Hello.
So I had.
The United States is pretty loaded in the outfield,
McCutcheon,
too.
Trout, Harper would be left or right. Would be my outfield.
You wouldn't put Trout in left field? You'd keep McCutcheon in center field instead?
No, I would put Trout in center.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. Does he grade out better on the metrics defensively than McCutcheon?
Maybe not as much as he used to, but I think McCutcheon probably has the worst arm.
That's probably true. George Springer, Mookie Betts, those are the guys I think need to be included.
Chris Bryant, I had him listed in outfield other than third base. But
I stuck him at DH.
DH, okay.
I wanted major league leader in home runs to be in the starting nine somewhere. Plus, the thing is with Bryant, maybe you want to start him in left field, one of these outfielders is DH, because Bryant's versatility is so unique. He can play both outfield corners, first base and left field, first base and third base. Wouldn't blow me away if in one major league game and for an inning, if you had Chris Bryant playing shortstop. So you wouldn't want that versatile player at DH. You'd lose the DH, and then heaven forfend, you'd have a pitcher hit. Who wants that?
Lorenzo Cain, you mentioned Giancarlo Stanton.
Another good choice.
And Mookie Betts. All these guys are in the discussion.
And again, I was more focused on this year. The other guy that I wrote down was Mark Trumbo, just because he's hitting. This is the year where he's hitting a lot of home runs. But, 24 home runs? He's tied for the Major League lead, I believe, with Chris Bryant. So, I also threw in, Freddie Freeman was one other player that I threw in at first base. But Daniel Murphy, I was surprised that I put Murphy and you didn't. What's the deal with that? So, first base, second base, third base, he's batted all three.
True. You can't justify playing on first base on this team.
No, you cannot.
I think we can find a lot better defense.
Did I even include a big league? I did do American bullpen, didn't I? Okay, just got cut off. You wrote your American rotation, Matt. Where'd you go?
Well, Kershaw's the ace. That's pretty clear.
Yes. You didn't do Bumgarner in your top five, did you?
No, I didn't list them in order. I just kind of jotted down names. I think you would have to take Bumgarner in there somewhere.
I think so. I think you have to take three left-handers. Kershaw, Bumgarner, and Sale, for me, are must-haves on any American rotation.
I mean, the way Arrieta's pitched for the last 2 years, you'd have to take him. You know, David Price this year might give you a little pause.
Correct. That's why I didn't include
Scherzer
him.
This year might give you a little pause.
A lot of home
this
runs
year, you know, so I don't know.
I went Syndergaard.
Syndergaard, yeah, I could see that.
I mean, Syndergaard, I think.
Syndergaard and Arrieta, your two right-handers.
Right. I'm just thinking of one world pitcher we left out, by the way, is Carlos Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
We should have mentioned Carlos Martinez in the world roster. I don't know why that just came up in my head, but Syndergaard, another guy that I missed on as a prospect. I mean, I liked him, but didn't like him as much as some others. Man, he's really good.
Yeah.
For a guy whose breaking ball was questioned in the Florida State League, I remember scouts really banging on his breaking ball on that level. And now where he has this slider that's a truly unique pitch. Nobody else throws a 92-mile-an-hour slider. Except for this guy, who every once in a while throws a 95-mile-an-hour slider. What the hell is going on?
The thing with him is he doesn't hold runners very well. So that is a weakness.
That could be exploited.
That might be exploited in this format.
Correct, but you know, if you needed to have a pitcher hit, you do have four. What was your U.S. bullpen? I can tell you, we both took Zach Britton. Because he's were there other U.S. starters that you wanted to mention? You mentioned Greinke.
Those are all the guys. Greinke,
Johnny Lester,
Corey Kluber. We should mention him at least.
The Klubot is impressive. Three Indians pitchers mentioned in the one podcast. That tells you what a crazy world we're in.
I know.
They all deserve it, too.
Yeah, Zach Britton, I think you'd have to take him just for his singularity, his left-handedness.
What was that fastball percentage that you had the other day up on Fangraphs? 86%?
81 ground ball percentage.
Oh, that was it.
4 out of 5 balls in play against him are ground balls. And when opponents hit ground balls, they're only hitting like 230.
So, well, I tell you this.
That's pretty good.
If he's on the mound, I don't want Daniel Murphy at second base. That's when for sure I want, or maybe even Matt Carpenter. I might have to have Dustin Pedroia on my bench as the backup. As a defensive replacement.
Kinsler,
sure. We rekindled the old Arizona State 2002 debate. And I definitely want Brandon Crawford playing shortstop in that case. I want my most sure-handed infielders. Then you definitely want Nolan Arenado out there. So
that's true. So Machado's a stud defensively.
He is. He's a stud.
you know, it's a lot of legacy guys here. I don't know exactly how they're doing this year. Wade Davis.
Wade Davis is on the DL now, but he's been certainly has been good enough.
Craig Kimbrell.
Right.
Andrew Miller and Betances, you know.
Andrew Miller and Dellin Betances tied the last I checked. I was just sorting by strikeouts per nine. So first you have to sort by saves on this baseball reference page to get leaders. Uh-oh, I did this wrong. So you sort by saves. That gets Miller and Betances on the page. And then you get down to Miller and Betances' stats, and they're just crazy. They're crazy stats because Miller has 66 strikeouts, I think, and 5 walks this year. He's averaging – both players are 16.2 strikeouts per nine. Here's Betances with 74-9 strikeout to walk in 41 innings is just, again, just like hard to compute. I mean, I know we're in a strikeout era. But he's the strikeoutness that ever struck a strikeout.
Yeah, look at that guy.
I mean, it's really just...
And still he's giving up runs this year.
Yeah, who touches this guy? it's hard to... I mean, you watch him, it's not a surprise. But just an incredible season. I mean, it's not as incredible as Clayton Kershaw's 145-9, you know. But Andrew Miller, again, 16.2 strikeouts per nine. Was his average. So to me, those two guys, here's Andrew Miller, 66 strikeouts in 36 2/3 innings and 5 walks. So how that team has that bad of an offense with that bullpen, it's kind of a crime. You know, it is unbelievable how epic that bullpen is.
And how neat Nate Eovaldi's in that bullpen. You know,
is he
by
really?
The way, he throws 100 from the rotation. So. Good
he's
luck.
He's like their sixth inning guy.
Yeah, know? That's the thing. Is like you need to go like your starter for 5 innings, period, and then bring in 6, 7, 8, 9.
It's kind of amazing how that goes.
I think you mentioned Will Harris, Astros closer Will Harris.
He's having a great year. You know, the other guy who's just done it for 3 years in a row now, 4 years in a row, Mark Melancon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mark Melancon to me just has to be a part of that. I'm a big Melancon guy, so I didn't actually take Kimbrell because I don't think Kimbrell wins over Davis or Melancon or Betances. Maybe he does over Will Harris. Maybe he does over Brad Brack, All-Star this year. I just wanted to put Brad Brack on there. I love saying his name.
We don't need to match that.
I cannot believe he's an All-Star. Word to Monmouth. That's great. That
I mean, they needed that ninth reliever on that roster.
So. Exactly. Exactly.
For the 9-inning game, got to have 9 relievers.
Well, what if you go 12? You're still going to use all 9 relievers, apparently. But... So the All-Star game is a little bit, I wouldn't say it's broken. I wouldn't even say it's stale. But you're in our 20th year of interleague play now, Matt. And the old interleague format for the All-Star game, I think, you can argue, could use some freshening up. I think a U.S. versus world team would be really a lot of fun.
It'd be fun.
I'm not sure if the U.S. players would take it as seriously as the world players probably would. But you do see that energy that is... in the world dugout, having been in that world dugout before for futures games, you know, the guys on that team, not all of them, but especially the Latin American players, especially the Dominicans and the Venezuelans, it means a lot to play with fellow Dominicans and Venezuelans. And every once in a while, Rene Tassoni sneaks in there and they all go crazy for Rene Tassoni or Justin Huber, both past futures game MVPs, as was Sao Chen Wei, the outfielder. No, was
that which? Wait, the Red Sox guy, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought it was Sao Chen Wei, but I think that's the pitcher. I think you're right. I apologize. This is ethnically insensitive of me. I can't remember his name.
This would be essentially a way to force participation for a World Baseball Classic finale, essentially.
Yeah, basically.
Because we have this format for the WBC, you know, separated by country. But we don't get full participation.
See, Will Lingo wanted to know if maybe you could get my idea of North Carolina versus the world or WBC that was set up just by by state. It's Ching. It was a Che Xuan Lin.
Che Xuan Lin. Yep.
So that's who it was. Who was the MVP? And the year before, it was Taiwanese shortstop of the Dodgers, Ching Lung Hu. So you had back to back Taiwan MVPs.
Wow.
Of the WBC. I mean, of the futures game. Which I could not have told you that in a million years. I remember Che Xuan Lin. I do not remember Ching Lung Hu. And I was there and I helped present the trophy to him in San Francisco. I remember interviewing him. I did the interviews that year.
Even after the long, illustrious major league careers, you couldn't remember these two guys?
Exactly. Didn't Che Xuan Lin
convert to pitcher?
Yeah,
the Rangers signed him as a pitcher.
United States has won 6 straight futures games. Wow. Matt, did you know that?
They're the American League of this format. You should probably just mention Verlander, Strasburg, and Cole Hamels from American pitchers. We can't fit in this.
Kind of amazing we didn't even mention Strasburg and Hamels. Yeah. I mean, Verlander's aged out a bit of this, but he's having a nice bounce back here this year.
Yeah.
And I'm a big Justin Verlander. I've always been a big Justin Verlander guy since, again, whiffing on him when he was not in the top 100 the year after he got drafted because we had so many negative reports on the makeup. Not that he was, just that he hadn't grown in 3 years in college. And now the guy's as worldly and as great of a spokesperson for Major League Baseball as anybody. He's directly at odds with his reputation back when he was when Dustin Pedroia was trying to get to him in the Pan Am Games dugout in 2003, and Ray Tanner had to separate him, going, "I'm getting punched." So, one of my favorite all-time stories is Dustin Pedroia going after Justin Verlander, saying, "Don't, you're not going to cost me an effing gold medal," in the dugout of the 2003 Pan Am Games. But I digress. David Price, though, conspicuous in his absence. Yeah. Who wins, Matt? Who wins? U.S. versus world best of 7 series.
Best of 7?
I still think that the United States starting pitching is a lot stronger than the world team. But, the world team is very right-handed to neutralize, in some ways, potentially neutralize, Kershaw and Bumgarner and Chris Sale.
Potentially, yeah.
I mean, would you counter with Arrieta or Syndergaard and the For Team USA, I guess the world team?
I guess you'd have to think about it. I was trying to look if there's any defense to exploit. I don't really think so.
I'm going to guess that the U.S. team probably is going to go be a little bit more all-in on the shifts than the world team. The world team might play it a little bit more straight up.
Yeah, I think it is. I think the starting rotation is the major area where one team is better than the other.
I think the U.S. bullpen's a little better, too. I think the pitching staff gets a clear edge to the United States. The lineups, though, are very, very competitive. Certainly the U.S. team has an advantage with, Trout and Harper are pretty singular talents, but it's not that the world team's hurting for offense.
And Posey's the best hitter among catchers by far.
By a wide margin. And then Lucroy might be the second best, and he's on the – last I checked, he's American, too. I like this exercise, though. It was a fun exercise, so hope listeners enjoyed it.
Tell us where we were wrong, of course, on Twitter.
Yeah, please do. That's what Twitter's there for. So let us know. And, of course, we'll have plenty of coverage from the Futures game out in San Diego. J.J. Cooper, Kyle Glazer, Josh Norris, Ben Badler, the whole menagerie will be there in San Diego. And look for the Baseball America prospect pad on Saturday. We're going to have plenty of interviews and social media as we bring some prospects in to the Hard Rock Cafe. That's an exciting event. First time we're doing that, and I'm really looking forward to it. So for Matt Eddy, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.